Welcome to Torah Imecha Parasha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be studying Parashat Ki Tetzeh. Parashat Ki Tetzeh earns the distinction of being the parasha containing the most mitzvot in the entire Torah, numbering 74, according to the Sefer HaChinuch. The mitzvot vary widely in their range, dealing with family matters such as marriage and divorce, sexual misconduct, obligations towards one's neighbors and fellow citizens, honesty in financial transactions, and further rules of social responsibility. Interspersed with these civil laws are several chukim, laws whose explanation is hidden from us, our observance of which attests to our faith in Hashem, such as the mitzvah regarding one who encounters a bird's nest and must send away the mother bird before taking the chicks, and the isurim of shatnez and kilayim, the prohibition of wearing a mixture of wool and linen and grafting two species of produce. The parasha deals with capital punishment, related directives, and with the holiness of Am Yisrael, and the prohibition of accepting converts from the nations of Ammon and Moab, who refused to supply Bnei Yisrael with provisions on our way to Eretz Yisrael, even though we were tired and oppressed and forbidden to initiate war with them. For as the descendants of Abraham Avinu's nephew Lot, they are our cousins. But having demonstrated that they lack the necessary quality of mercy and loving kindness, they are unworthy of entering the community of Israel. This law became the subject of hot debate during the time period of Megillat Rut, when Rut, a Moabite princess, determined to convert and join her mother-in-law Naomi upon her return to Israel. It was decreed by the Sanhedrin that the verse in our parasha is written in the masculine form and does not apply to the women of Moab, since they wouldn't have been involved in the refusal to offer sustenance. Nevertheless, even in the time of David HaMelech, Ruth's great-grandson, there were still some who questioned the legitimacy of his lineage and his right to the throne. We are reminded to be careful with our speech, so as not to suffer the punishment of tzara'at, and to promptly redeem our nidarim, voluntary offerings, bringing them to the mikdash at the earliest opportunity, the first of the shalosh regalim that falls after making our commitment. The parasha concludes with the mitzvah to remember and eradicate Amalek, the paradigm for baseless hatred of and cruelty towards Am Yisrael. The parasha opens with a sequence of three scenarios that are notable in that in a parasha replete with practical rules that feel very real and applicable, these stand out as somewhat unlikely. First, we find the case of a man who in wartime sees a beautiful woman among the captives and wants to take her as a wife, followed by the case of a man with two wives, one beloved and the other despised, whose eldest son is a product of the latter union. And thirdly, the case of a child who is wayward and rebellious. Rashi cites the Midrash Tanchuma, which teaches, Lo dibra Torah, ela keneged yetzer hara. She'im ein hakadosh baruch hu matira, yisa'ena be'isur. Aval im nisa'a, sofo lihiyot son'a. She'ne'emar acharav ki tiyena le'ish ve'gomer, V'sofo leholid mimena ben sorer umore. Lekach nismichu parashot halalu. The Torah speaks here only in consequence of man's evil inclination. In other words, this mitzvah is a concession, not an ideal toward which one should strive, as are most mitzvot. The only reason the Torah permits a marriage between a man and a beautiful captive is because if the man is attracted to this beautiful woman, if the Torah were to prohibit his taking her as a wife, he would be likely to, God forbid, violate the law and take her anyway. However, the Torah does warn, if a man does persist in taking such a woman as his wife, he'll end up hating her, and ultimately the son born of such a union will become wayward and rebellious, and that's why these three scenarios are juxtaposed to one another. Rashi is teaching us a fundamental principle. The Torah is well aware of human psychology and doesn't demand anything of us that we are not capable of doing. If in this case, the Torah makes a concession and permits a relationship that is clearly superficial in nature, falling so far short of the ideal marriage of heart and mind that's envisioned by the Torah, it is because man's Yetzer Hara is so strong in this case that it may be too much to ask for it to be overcome, which implies that everything else the Torah does demand of us is not too much to ask. As Moshe Rabbeinu will say himself in Parashat Nitzavim, Ki karov elecha hadavar me'od, b'ficha u'bilvavcha la'asoto. The Torah is within the reach of every Jew, in our hearts and minds, to be able to perform that which is written therein. Thus Moshe Rabbeinu warns us that even while such a marriage is technically permissible, we must recognize that the desire for such a union emanates from the evil inclination, and as such, will yield devastating results. While Rashi focuses exclusively on the core teaching of the Midrash as it relates to the meaning of the text within its context, the Midrash itself offers both a prologue and an epilogue to this explanation. Introducing this section, the Midrash begins with the following preface. Shanu Rabotenu. Mitzvah goreret mitzvah, va'avera goreret avera. Our sages taught in Pirkei Avot, chapter 4, Mishnah 2, one mitzvah leads to another, one transgression leads to another. The Midrash then lists the sequence of events found here, and then adds the epilogue, Shekein k'tiv b'David, al shechamad ma'acha bat talmai melech gishur b'tzeito l'milchama, yatsa mimenu av shalom, shebikesh lehorgo, v'shachav im eser pilag shav le'inei kol Yisrael u'le'inei ha'shemesh, ve'al yado nehergu mi'Yisrael kama rivavot, ve'asa machloket bi'Yisrael, v'neherag shimi ben gera, v'sheva ben bichri, v'achi tofel, u'le'mifiboshet harag, v'hishlit tziva al kol beit Shaul. So it is written with regard to David HaMelech, because he desired Ma'acha, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur, when he went out to war against him, Avshalom was born of that union and grew up to rebel against and attempt to kill his own father, publicly defiled his father's concubines, was the cause of conflict among the nation, and caused a myriad of deaths, tens of thousands of men of Israel, as well as notable individuals, including Shimi ben Gera, Sheva ben Bichri, and Achitofel, all of whom were killed because of their own sinfulness and the various roles they played during Avshalom's rebellion. But he afforded them the opportunity and is therefore charged with bringing about their deaths. He impoverished Mephibosheth, the son of Shaul, which is akin to killing him, by causing his property to be transferred to his father's opportunistic servant, Tziva. Again, a scenario brought about by the rebellion and therefore charged to Avshalom's account. This sequence of events illustrates the principle of Avera Goreret Avera. In his commentary on Pirkei Avot, Rabbeinu Yonah explains that once a person has committed one sin, it's psychologically easier for him to sin again. Similarly, in our Psukim, If one has entered into a relationship that is governed by the Yetzer Hara, it stands to reason that that relationship will not be the loving, giving relationship of two people who respect and value one another. It will quickly deteriorate into a marriage of ill will and mistrust, and a child raised in such an atmosphere will unsurprisingly turn wayward and rebellious. This sequence of psukim and Rashi's explanation thereof, read as we enter the month of Elul, affords us a timely opportunity to examine the roots of our behaviors and think about where they are leading us. The Midrash points out that just as one transgression leads to another, the same is true of mitzvot. Mitzvah goreret mitzvah, as we see from the ensuing chain of mitzvot found in the parasha. What a perfect time for us to examine our deeds and start with just one mitzvah, which will lead to another, and so forth and so on, as we approach the new year. Further on in the parasha, in Perek Chaf Dalet, Psukim Chet and Tet, chapter 24, verses 8 and 9, we find another phrase that stands out and serves as a guiding principle. Moshe warns, Hishamer b'nega hatzara'at, lishmor me'od, ולעשות ככל אשר יורו אתכם הכהנים הלוויים כאשר ציוויתים תשמרו לעשות. Be extremely vigilant in case of a lesion of tzara'at, and do everything the kohanim and levim instruct you, as I have commanded them to be careful to do. זכור את אשר עשה השם אלוקיך למרים בדרך בצאתכם ממצרים. Remember that which Hashem did to Miriam on the way when you left Mitzrayim. Unlike the earlier sequence of psukim we studied, these verses are a non sequitur, unrelated to the psukim which precede and following them. They constitute a complete thought unit unto themselves. The second of these psukim may sound familiar to some of you. This is one of the Shesh Zechirot, the six times the Torah issues a command of Zachor, obligating us to remember a highly significant event in Jewish history. Some people have the custom of reciting these daily at the conclusion of Tfilat Shacharit, where you'll find them in many Sidurim, as a way of actively fulfilling these mitzvot. The other five are: remember the Exodus from Mitzrayim, remember standing at Mount Sinai to receive the Torah, remember what Amalek did to you on your way out of Mitzrayim, remember how you angered Hashem in the desert, and remember the Sabbath. This particular remembrance, remember that which Hashem did to Miriam, is striking in that it speaks of an individual, while all the others address national events. What is the eternal national significance of Miriam's having been struck with tzara'at in the desert on our way out of Mitzrayim? Most of the commentators interpret the command contextually based on the previous pasuk, warning of caution in treating the spiritual disease of tzara'at. Ramban cites Rashi, who teaches, "Im bata lihizaher shelo tilkeh betzara'at, al tisaper lashon hara. Zachor he'asui lemiriam shedibra be'achiha vilikta benegaim." If you really want to be careful, avoid tzara'at altogether by refraining from speaking lashon hara. Remember that which Hashem did to Miriam, who was struck by lesions when she spoke about her brother. Ramban elaborates, stating that in his opinion, this constitutes a positive commandment to remember what Hashem did to Miriam as a warning against slander. If such a righteous woman as Miriam, who spoke out of concern for her beloved brother and avoided embarrassing him by speaking of her concern privately only to their brother Aharon, was nevertheless punished, and all her many good deeds couldn't spare her from that punishment, how much do we have to be vigilant in this matter? If this is the meaning of the text, again, what a timely reminder to be mindful of our speech, particularly in the month of Elul. Rav Kook, in his commentary on the Siddur, Olat Ra'aya, offers a broader understanding of this injunction. He explains that Miriam is representative of all prophets other than Moshe Rabbeinu. Her mistake was that in speaking about Moshe to Aharon, she implied that Moshe was equivalent to other prophets. And this was such a serious error that Hashem himself interrupted the conversation instantly to teach that the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu was unique. No other prophet could achieve the level of clarity granted to Moshe. And this is the lesson taught to Miriam that we are enjoined to remember. In his words, "V'davar ze tzarich zechira." Mipnei shehu choma b'tzura el Torat Hashem v'nitzchiyuta, kevan shehashem yibarach gazar omer she'ein shum navi domelo b'ma'alato, v'im kein i efshar sheyye navi hamivatel chas v'shalom et davar echad midvarav. This requires remembrance, since it is a fortified barrier protecting the integrity and eternity of the Torah. Hashem clearly decreed that no other Navi would approach the level of Moshe. Therefore, no later prophet can legitimately challenge or nullify, God forbid, a single word of his teaching. And that is the eternal national significance of the lesson Hashem taught to Miriam on our way out of Mitzrayim. Rav Shlomo Aviner adds that it is especially fitting that it was Miriam through whose efforts Moshe Rabbeinu was brought into this world and saved from the decree of Paro, who was chosen to be the vehicle for this teaching. Thank you for studying our eternal Torah together.